Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How do we feel about Jameson Taillon after the veteran gave up five earned runs in four innings pitch, including two more home runs before leaving quicker than anybody thought in an 8-7 loss to the Brewers yesterday? Was this the exception or the rule? Anybody wonder if Craig Counsell should have skipped Taillon and started Kate Horton? Do you like Horton going Saturday against the Mariners?
I think the key is to not overreact and not give up on Jameson Taillon, who has been very consistent, and he has stepped forward. When you talk about people who have done their jobs better in the absence of Shota Imanaga, right at a time where the Cubs needed that, Jameson Taillon is near the top of that list. Now, you balance that with the disappointment of him giving up three more home runs and now giving up 18 homers, which is tied for third in most in baseball. So there's that balance as well. I don't know that that's going to change much, because that is who he has been this year. He says he's going to get to the bottom of it. I hope that he does, and soon. Two home runs yesterday, not three. He is third highest total in the majors. I think all this did to me was underscore a couple things. Number one, this is why Jed Hoyer is going to go out and get a top-of-the-rotation starter. Number two, this is why you can't leave Cade Horton out of the rotation entirely. You need him to pitch tomorrow. Matthew Boyd is going today, and that's a good decision. And I'm fine with them going back to Horton and not skipping him altogether, just giving him an extra day, because I think you need his consistency. Get that consistency from a rookie? Yes. He's been one of your better starting pitchers since he has been brought up. So the Taillon thing you can accept. But it's a grim reminder that you do need a true, full-fledged ace.
Not one, but two. So you need Seiya to continue to hit, but you need Shota to come back and really, you know, dominate. That is what sticks out. I appreciate that Jameson Taillon does own it and says he's going to work on it. I don't doubt that he's going to work on it. And then you almost wonder if you feel good about the Cubs making the postseason, if you wonder if, like, it's better if Taillon opens up on the road, you know, not at Wrigley, where the ball might fly out a little bit easier than other places, depending. Because he's like, well, I am a fly ball pitcher, and I allow solo home runs. Like, that's okay. It's not okay with this Cubs fan. No, I don't think they should have had Horton throw yesterday. I think how they're handling Horton, again, tip of the cap to the Cubs. I think this is spot on. I think this is very smart the way they're doing it. They, you know, his start was missed. They skipped him. They're skipping him again. So he's getting a little extra rest. I think that should pay off, but not too much where he's going to get out of his mix.
You don't want the rest to lead to rust.
No.
So that's what they're trying to do. Strike that balance.
I'm agreeing with you guys. I do agree with the Taillon start and taking Cade Horton and putting him on Saturday. Would have been a little more fun to see, because we haven't seen Cade Horton in a little bit, sure. But right now, Taillon has been the fill-in ace pitcher for the Cubs. And we need to see, as Cubs fans, we need to see Cade Horton. I don't need another arm getting thrown out in this Cubs rotation, because they just keep dealing with the injury bug. So setting him back for a couple days, rest, and then get set for Saturday, I can't disagree with that. And so, but again, like what Dustin said, I love that J-Mo owned up to it, but again, you still gave up two home runs.
That's Tyler Buderbaugh, not to be confused with Tyler Farengol. Tyler Farengol is baby tea. Tyler Buderbaugh is, I don't know.
Butterball.
Butterball. Okay, let's go with that.
Oh, great question.
All right, what was more impressive for the struggling White Sox in Game 1, the loss to the Cardinals? They also lost Game 2. Sean Burke giving up 2 runs and 4 hits in 5 1/3, or Grant Taylor working a 1-2-3 in relief? Are Burke and Taylor two pitchers you believe will be a big part of the staff when the Sox are good again? How many pitchers on the MLB roster for the Sox can you say the same about?
Well, they're going to find out. I think it's fascinating to see what the White Sox are in the midst of. Sean Burke, I think, is going to be a guy that keeps on being thrown out there every fifth day. I think he could be a contributor. Davis Martin comes to mind. Grant Taylor, yes, absolutely. What role to be determined later. Noah Schultz made his AAA debut last night, so he is on the way. There are guys who can help. Mike Vassell, I think, will be better than he was yesterday, and certainly. When you look at Shane Smith, he's a guy who's a Rule 5 pitcher that can be part of the future as well. The White Sox are in the midst of what they're referred to as roster velocity. And this is something very interesting. Baseball Prospectus. Matthew Trueblood wrote about this in Baseball Prospectus. Roster velocity. They've tried 51 players so far this year. 30 of those players they have under team control for multiple seasons ahead. It's referred to as a new plan. Chris Getz is throwing as much against the wall as he can to see what sticks. And when you're in the midst of an 8-game losing streak and you're staring at your third straight 100-loss season, the more chances you take, the more times you're going to hit. So I think you keep on trotting people out there, seeing what you've got, and flipping the veterans that you can and making the most of what is becoming another long season. You're seeing progress, but now you got to start seeing some victories.
They are more competitive this time around. There's no doubt about that. I'm a little bit more soured than ever because they couldn't at least split with the Cardinals yesterday. And they tried, and they got close. I mean, game two didn't look close, but Benintendi went boom and hit a Benny bomb. Is that how they...
Benny bomb.
Benny bomb on CHSN yesterday with with the Grand Slam. That was actually kind of cool to see. You know, I guess Grant Taylor and Sean Burke would be in the mix. But again, what is that timeline? Is it 2 years? Is it 3 years? Is it four? You know, it's not next year, right? Unless there's this influx of Ishbia money is going to be used on the roster, which all indication says it's not going to be. But, I'm not rooting against any of these guys individually.
I mean, I'll give them both credit because, I mean, Sean Burke, yes, he gave up the 2 home runs, but they kept the lead in that game. And then with Grant Taylor, he did a 1-2-3 inning relief, and he refused the Cardinals from getting any more runs in. So, I mean, both get their flowers. I give it more to Taylor because, I mean, that was later in the game. It wasn't his fault that the White Sox blew that game and blew that lead. As far as seeing these two on the roster, I think you should see them on the roster. They're looking like two promising young pitchers for this White Sox team that's starting to find some guys in this roster. But, again, we've seen in the past that the White Sox have not been good at making certain trades with some of their young prospects. So should they? Yes. But will they? I don't think so.
I will let you guys ask any questions.
In the White Sox booth the other night, Steve Stone asked Bears rookie tight end Colston Loveland what kind of tight end he'll be.
There was a tight end in this city that actually played pretty well and then had a restaurant, and the name was Mike Ditka, went on to coach a team and all that. Would you consider yourself a prototypical tight end, or are you something different?
I think I'm just a tight end that can do it all. Whatever I'm asked to do, I feel like I can go out there and do it at a high level. Like I said, obviously a ton of improvement needs to be done in, you know, every aspect of my game. But, I feel like I can do it all, and I'm excited to just continue to work at it.
That clip courtesy of CHSN. Do you agree with Loveland? How surprised are you of his confidence? And if you had an over-under of his receptions next year at 68, which would be 4 per game, which way would you bet?
First of all, I love it when Stoney kind of crosses over into other sports. The other night it was Colston Loveland in the booth talking Mike Ditka. Then yesterday it was Steve Stone referencing the Florida Panthers trade for Brad Marchand as being the kind of deal teams need to make to get something they don't have. Little grit, little experience, a little bit of sandpaper, that kind of stuff. How teams fit together, roster building. I like that. As for Colston Loveland, he's very humble. He's very direct. He's not going to He's not going to be as charismatic and exuberant. He's not PCA. He's not football PCA. But he is a guy who is going to be productive. And if I had to take the over under at 68 receptions for next year, that's four per game. I'm going over.
I mean, I like the confidence. I don't think it was cocky. I thought he was confident, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I, with all due respect, I mean, I would be absolutely floored in a good way, shocked in a good way, if he had 68 receptions.
Really?
There's just not enough balls to go around. I mean, is Cole Kmet getting benched?
No.
I'm just saying, 68, I mean, first, here's another.
Four
let's just
per
keep
game.
It. I know it seems low, but you also have Rome Odunze and DJ Moore looking to become the next duo, right, to have record-breaking seasons for Bears receiving. We're talking about, I mean, you can, I think if they're playing 12 personnel, since everybody loves to do that, right, 12 personnel, take a drink, you'll be drunk by, you know, whenever during the Bears season, you know, talking 12 personnel. I just think that they're going to go to Cole Kmet more than Colston Loveland. First of all, you know, the other thing I'm still a little bit worried about, is he going to be fully ready to go?
He says so.
Okay.
He says he will be.
Prove me wrong.
Did Stoney ask him that? Inning wasn't long enough?
I love the confidence by the rookie. I mean, it's great. I don't find it cocky at all. But 68 receptions, that's too much for me. Just like what Dustin said, there's a lot of playmakers on this team. And I think we're going to see more of an improvement. I don't know what the line is for Rome Odunze for receptions, I'd put that over. Colston Loveland still has more. He needs to be building his chemistry with Caleb Williams more. Caleb's already got his chemistry with DJ Moore, Rome Odunze, and Cole Kmet. So, I mean, and he's still coming back from his surgery. So, 68 is just, I think he'll get close.
Okay.
But it's too much for me.
Great question, Dan.
On the By the Horns podcast, Casey Johnson, our 725 guest, addresses what could be the Bulls' strategy in next Wednesday's NBA draft, despite having a roster that's guard heavy.
I've been told that is the best player available is definitely in play for the Bulls. Ooh. They will not be averse to taking a guard if a guard slots as, you know, the best player on their board at when they get to number 12. And the logic behind that is, you know, even though they are guard heavy right now, the next roster iteration for the Bulls really is projected for that 2026 offseason, because that's when they get a lot of salary cap space. And really the only guys you can project long term from the backcourt for this team right now are Josh Giddey and Kobe White. Even Ayo Dosunmu, as good as he is, you know, could be potentially a trade candidate down the road.
Can the Bulls draft a guard without trading one? And what do you think of their draft day strategy should be? And is there a player you hope falls to them?
I think they should avoid guards if possible. They have too many already. And there's not somebody that jumps out at you at 12 that's going to be a difference maker enough to stockpile a position that you already have players at. Unless you trade Kobe White or trade Ayo or trade Lonzo Ball on draft night, I don't know how you could go to the podium with all of those guards still under contract and convince people that's the best move to draft another guard. Not when there are guys like maybe Derek Queen on the board. I'm going to stick with him, the center from Maryland. I think there's going to be, you know, Shaka Shonis is going to be a guy from Illinois that, if he's there, is going to be tempting for Arturis Karnišovas. You're going to have other people, Demean, the BYU. Again, you look at, he's 6'9 and a half. What position will he play? Is he going to be a Josh Giddey type? All these questions have you know, complex answers. It's best available is usually the safest way to go, but you don't want to have a roster with duplicate parts, because that's how you have a roster that doesn't fit together. So I would prefer that they have either a rim protector or somebody like Derek Queen, who is an offensive weapon. And you could envision, even though he doesn't fit into your maybe approach, your 3-and-D approach, I still think you would go for the most talent. Can you be most best available player who's taller than 6'9"?
So now you've got a height restriction on it as well.
I don't know. I mean, I just don't want them to see. I just don't want to see another guard.
You know, as far as like their draft strategy, you know, do they even need one? You just hand out extensions for teams that are just fluttering around 500, who haven't made a playoff or won a playoff series in who knows, God knows when, and the front office is getting rewarded with contract extensions. They obviously do whatever the hell they want to do over there without any ramifications. I mean, I want Derek Queen, but I want Derek Queen for the good of the show. Like, that, you know, there's been so much talk about him and so much fun and the comparison to Moses Malone and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Derek Queen, I'm all in on Derek Queen.
Please, no more guards. They've drafted guards, what, the last 5 years? No, there doesn't need to be any more guards on this Bulls roster. I'm in the same boat as you guys. I love Derek Queen. He's a rim protector. He actually plays defense that the Bulls lack on, and having a big man to play defense like that. No, they don't need a guard. But the thing is with Derek Queen, I don't know if he's going to fall to where they're sitting. They might have to trade up. And so, you know what? Use some of the guards that you have and not get any more guards and use that as some trade bait to possibly get up and trade Derek Queen. But stop it with the drafting the guards.
Hey, man, Jalen Johnson posted a picture of the fine you gave him. Is this not like a bigger issue than the fine itself?
That's news to me.
Did the Pacers make the right decision on Tyrese Halliburton in game number 6? And what do you think was the turning point of the game? Has this series lived up or down to your expectations level? And because we're not going to be here until Monday, let's get a little prediction.
Tyrese Halliburton made the right decision, and the Pacers did too. He played because he had to play. There was no other choice, really, unless he was in a cast in the surgical ward or the recovery room. There was no choice. He was going to play. This is why you play. That was a do-or-die moment in a building that was as electric as any NBA arena ever has been. So, yes, they made the right decision to play him. Yes, they did everything necessary to live up to that moment and meet the moment. And I think that Oklahoma City, I fear this. The only thing I fear about Sunday night is that if they don't win, as they should, and I think absolutely, I think as they will, I regret, I hope I've never wanted to be wrong more, but I think Oklahoma City will win this series and be champion Sunday night in Oklahoma City. But if they lose, I hope that it's all about the Pacers winning and not the Thunder losing. But I could understand people going that way because they won 68 games in the regular season. And if they don't close it out with an NBA title, there will be historical comparisons to the best teams that never won a title. And good. I hope that we'll spend Monday morning talking about those comparisons because I want Indiana to win. I want the Pacers to have a moment because you know what? In 49 states, it's just basketball, but this is Indiana.
Go Pacers. It's hard to say that. We've gotten some texts like, how dare you guys say that? I'm a growing up in the 90s kind of Bulls fan through and through, no doubt about that. But this is what makes sports great. Game sevens, teams that, you know, gentlemen sweep, and then they played their rear ends off, and the crowd in Indiana was awesome. So if you were down there and want to tell us about your experience, I'd love to hear from somebody who was at that game. That was really, really awesome. Don't forget, David Haw needs a T-shirt. Yeah, large, extra large. Depends on the day, right? You know, Tyrese Halliburton had to play.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, how many minutes, you know, you got on, you know, how many, you know, is it a Thursday or is it a Monday? You know, if you're like me, I might drop like 8 pounds during the week and then put like the 6 pounds back on the weekend kind of thing.
I don't fluctuate that much.
Yeah, I'm a big fluctuator. Halliburton had to play. I love the way they used him, though.
Yeah.
He played a 23-minute night, so the lowest of the starters, so they were wise. And I'm gonna be wrong probably, but I'm gonna stick with my guns. I'm gonna say Pacers in 7. The thing about this Thunder team is they are very young, and some people think that's what the Achilles is right this second. But for the good of sport, go Pacers.
Obviously, with the outcome, love the fact that they played Tyrese Halliburton. You needed him in there. It was elimination game, game 6 at home. You needed that to happen. Obviously, I'm glad that they used him. They didn't overplay him. He didn't he was still a factor, like not so much offensively, but he got there with defensively. He had two, got himself two steals, got himself a couple blocks or a couple of rebounds. I'm sorry, but that's what you needed. And yes, could be long term injury if he got hurt, but you have all offseason, and this is the time. This is the window for me for the Pacers, and it was to get that cast past that game six to make game seven. I'm going to have to say I think Oklahoma City wins at home. It is tough to play there. My heart says Indiana, but my money says Oklahoma City.
Wait, there's a loaded question.
The Athletic reported that NASCAR and San Diego Sports Tourism Commission are negotiating to hold the race on the streets of Southern California in 2026, causing the Tribune to speculate if next month's event in downtown Chicago could be the final race here. And Mayor Brandon Johnson's office, course, declined to comment. What's your reaction? Would you miss NASCAR in Chicago, and do you dread or look forward to this race?
Kind of neither. I don't know that I dread it, but I don't know that I look forward to it either. The alterations in downtown, the traffic patterns are beginning to be adjusted and all those things, and it can be inconvenient, but I think overall it's been a fascinating experiment, but they've not had cooperation from the weather. It's been bad 2 years in a row, and you wonder what it will be this season or this year or this weekend when they do have it in July. And I saw that story, and I wondered if that means NASCAR is moving out of Chicago. And the fact that there has been no comment makes you think even more, it's even more likely that it is leaving town or maybe not returning next year, which I think would be fine with most people. I don't know if there's anybody out there that would miss NASCAR in Chicago. They should let us know, because I'd like to hear from them. What would you miss and why? It's a sport that I feel like you can appreciate. It's an event that you can appreciate and enjoy. But I just don't know if it's one of those things on the calendar that Chicago sports fans have come to circle necessarily. Maybe I'm dead wrong there. They do a nice job in presenting it. A lot of people work very hard at putting it all together. I'm not sure it would be missed.
In all seriousness, the last time you were not inconvenienced coming to work or leaving from work in Chicago and back to the, either the northern or western or southern burbs. I mean, it's always an inconvenience. Yesterday, unfortunately, the Eisenhower yesterday morning was closed outbound at 3 a.m. and inbound at 3 a.m. Both ways at 3 a.m. were closed. Inbound and outbound, where you had to get off and do some things, and you know, sad state of affairs. Would it be missed? I typically take off of work during this time of year, so I haven't run into the traffic patterns. I think when you see it on television, I think it does a nice job of propping up our great city. Mm-hmm. I think it puts the city in a good light. What's the economic impact at the end of the day? That's what's most important, probably, for an event like this. Would I miss it? No, but I haven't gone to it either.
Love the idea. It was a great idea, the concept and everything, but it is just too much of a pain in the ass for the traffic and everything like that. I mean, it's, and the first 2 years that they've done it, hasn't it rained out the first day in like both weekends? So I mean, clearly luck is not on Chicago's side to host NASCAR in the city when it's gotten rained in and it's been slick as hell. So for the NASCAR fans out there, I mean, yes, I think it'd be great for you. Actually, I think Baby T is a huge NASCAR fan, so he probably loves this. But it's just inconvenience as hell, and I don't think it brings in that much. Like, I mean, I don't know. I would love to see how much revenue it brings, but I don't think it brings in that much. And then plus, weather, Mother Nature doesn't want it here because it rains all the time.
I don't think that's appropriate.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
For your question,
that is the Pick Six. When we come back, we will have an extra point, and it will have to do with our 9:30 guest, Pete Crow Armstrong. the history he is making and the fun he is having. Keep it right there. It's Mully and Haw. Mully is off today. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.